Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today we're jumping into a story that starts with, a very flashy red Ferrari. But the real journey, it's about why someone would sell it. We're diving deep into Robin Sharma's bestseller, The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. Our goal here is pretty straightforward. Cut through the noise and pull out the real, actionable wisdom from this, it's kind of a modern fable, isn't it? We're following the incredible story of Julian Mantle, thing high-powered lawyer, seven-figure salary, the whole package.
Including that Ferrari, yeah.
Including the Ferrari, and how he basically trades all that external stuff, everything society tells us is success, for something deeper, inner peace.
And it's such a relevant deep dive for today, I think, because the book really taps into this widespread feeling of, burnout, spiritual emptiness, even when you've ticked all the conventional success boxes.
Right, like Julian. He had the mansion, the jet, the car.
Everything.
Yeah.
But inside, he was falling apart. So the core idea here is this massive shift in focus, moving away from external stuff, you know, accumulating things, towards internal cultivation, really working on your mind, your body, your character.
It definitely makes you question that whole Western idea that status plus wealth equals happiness. It's just not that simple. So let's talk about Robin Sharma himself for a moment, the author. He's a huge name in leadership now, globally recognized. Mm. But his own backstory is key to why this book feels so real.
Absolutely. What's so compelling is that Sharma literally walked the path his character does. He started out as a successful litigation lawyer. Same high-stress world.
Wow. Really? I didn't realize it was that direct a parallel.
Oh, yeah. He hit his own wall, had his own crisis of meaning, and actually left his law career to explore spiritual wisdom.
So he lived it.
He lived it.
Yeah.
And that gives his writing huge credibility, don't you think? He's not just reporting theories. He made the leap. And his real talent, I think, is blending ancient wisdom, you know, Eastern ideas like yoga, but also Western psychology with practical modern techniques. He makes this stuff feel achievable.
He bridges that gap between like the mystical and the Monday morning meeting.
Exactly. Grounded and actionable.
Okay, so let's get into Julian's story. It kicks off pretty dramatically. Julian Mantle, living this life of total excess, we're talking crazy work hours, fueled by ego.
Totally unsustainable.
Completely. And it all comes crashing down. He's had a massive heart attack right in the middle of a packed courtroom. He's only 53. It's like his body just screamed, enough.
And that physical breakdown forces the big change, the one the title hints at. He realizes, you know, this kind of success, it's actually failure if it costs you your soul.
Yeah.
So he does it. Sells everything. The mansion, the jet, the stocks, and yes, the famous Ferrari. And he just takes off for India looking for, meaning something real.
And his journey takes him deep into the Himalayas, right? He finds this almost mythical group of monks, the sages of Savana.
Mm-hmm. They seem timeless, just radiating peace. And he ends up staying there, studying for 3 years under their main teacher, Yogi Raman.
3 years.
Yeah, a total immersion. And the way the book is structured is quite clever. Julian comes back, but he's completely changed. He's vibrant, looks younger, calm, nothing like the lawyer he was.
And he shares everything he learned with his old junior colleague, John.
Exactly. But he doesn't just lecture him. He uses this amazing allegorical story, a fable, to pass on the wisdom. And that whole framework becomes this blueprint for transformation, mind, body, spirit, all integrated.
Okay, so this fable is the core. This is how the wisdom gets delivered. It's built around these seven virtues of enlightened living, and each one is represented by a symbol in the story. It's a really neat way to remember it all.
It really is. And it all starts, fittingly, inside the mind. The first symbol is the Magnificent Garden. This stands for Virtue One, Master Your Mind.
The garden is your mind.
Precisely. You're the gardener. And if you don't actively tend it, pull the weeds, which are the negative thoughts. They'll just take over and choke out the positive flowers. You have to cultivate it.
And Sharma doesn't just leave it there, right? There are actual techniques.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading about the heart of the rose.
Yeah, that's one. It sounds simple, maybe even a bit strange, but it's about building focus. You literally stare intently at the center of a rose, build stillness, and then there's opposition thinking.
Which is
catching a negative thought the moment it arises and consciously immediately replacing it with a positive, constructive one. It's like mental self-defense.
Okay, so mind mastery first. Then what?
Then you need direction. The next symbol is the towering lighthouse. This represents virtue too. Follow your purpose. your dharma.
Right. If the mind is clear, the lighthouse shows you where to steer the ship.
Exactly. The idea is that true fulfillment comes when your daily actions line up with your unique calling, your reason for being here. The lighthouse guides you through life's storms.
And finding that purpose, that needs intention.
Yeah.
He talks about the 5-step method for attaining goals. And part of that involves the magic rule of 21.
Yes, the 21-day rule. Do something consistently for 21 days and it becomes a habit.
It sounds so straightforward. But sticking to something new for 21 days, that takes willpower.
It absolutely does. Which leads perfectly into the third symbol, the sumo wrestler. This embodies virtue 3, practice kaizen.
Kaizen, that's the Japanese concept.
Yes, for constant, never-ending improvement. But the key here is small, consistent, daily steps, micro-refinements. It's not about giant, heroic leaps. It's about the slow, steady dedication of the sumo wrestler building strength over time.
Okay, so mastery through small, daily actions, like chipping away at it.
Exactly. And the how for this is what Julian learns as the 10 rituals of radiant living. These are specific daily practices, things like a ritual of solitude for quiet time, ritual of physicality for exercise, ritual of abundant knowledge for reading. These are the engine driving that kaizen improvement.
Got it. Daily rituals fuel constant improvement. Makes sense.
And those daily practices build inner strength, that resolve. Which brings us to the fourth symbol, which is kind of intriguing, the pink wire cable. This is virtue 4, live with discipline.
A pink wire cable. Okay.
The image is powerful. A single strand of wire, weak, easily broken, but twist many wires together into a cable.
Unbreakable.
Right. Small acts of discipline, practiced consistently, forge an unbreakable character. Willpower isn't just something you have or don't have. It's presented as a muscle you strengthen through regular exercise.
Like going to the gym for your willpower.
Kind of, yeah. And the exercises, things like using mantras, positive affirmations repeated to reprogram your thinking, creative envisioning, visualizing your goals, but also something called the vow of silence.
A vow of silence. How does that work in like a normal job? Is it literal?
Not necessarily about being totally mute all day. It's more about the practice of controlling impulse, not speaking unnecessarily, thinking before you talk, resisting the urge to react immediately. It's like a heavy lift for that discipline muscle, gaining control.
Okay, I see. It's about mindful communication, not just silence.
It's precisely making discipline a conscious choice.
All right, so discipline connects to the real world through what's next? The goal stopwatch, symbolizing virtue 5. Respect your time.
Yes. This one hits home for many people. Julian learns time is our ultimate non-renewable resource. Hmm. Once it's gone, it's gone. This virtue encourages living with a kind of deathbed mentality.
Meaning,
if you knew you had limited time left, what would truly matter? It forces you to clarify priorities and cut out the trivial stuff.
That makes sense. And how do you do that practically?
Well, Sharma suggests applying the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. Focus your energy on the 20% of activities that give you 80% of your results. And, crucially, learn the ancient art of saying no.
Saying no. That's a tough one for a lot of us.
It is, but it's essential for protecting your time and energy for what aligns with your lighthouse, your purpose. It's an act of disciplined self-care.
Okay, so we've covered mind, purpose, kaizen, discipline, time. What's virtue 6?
Virtue 6 shifts the focus outwards. It's symbolized by the fragrant yellow roses, representing virtue 6. Selflessly serve others.
Service. Contribution.
Exactly. The sages teach that deep, lasting meaning isn't found in self-absorption, but in contributing to the lives of others. Shifting from what can I get to what can I give.
Yeah.
Practicing daily acts of kindness.
That feels like a really important shift, especially after focusing so much on self-mastery.
It brings balance. And finally, the fable concludes with the path of diamonds. This is virtue 7. Embrace the present.
The diamonds. Those are the moments of now.
Beautifully put, yes. The diamonds are the precious, unique moments of the present. The sages teach that real happiness isn't about chasing some future goal or dwelling on the past. It's found right here in savoring the journey itself.
That's probably the hardest one in our always-on, future-focused world, getting off that treadmill.
It really is. The practical advice here is things like practicing gratitude consciously. And I love the phrase, living your children's childhood, not just being physically present, but mentally engaged, savoring those fleeting moments with loved ones, being there.
Wow. Okay. Those are the 7 virtues. Let's try and pull back a bit and look at the big themes that emerge from Julian's whole journey.
Yeah. Stepping back, there are some powerful core messages. It's more than just a list. It's a whole mindset shift.
The most obvious one, I think, has to be the critique of materialism, the hollowness of materialism.
Yeah.
That Ferrari is the perfect symbol, isn't it? All that external flash, but zero internal substance for Julian.
Absolutely. The big takeaway is that true wealth isn't your bank balance. It's vitality, it's connection, it's peace of mind, inner richness, not outer.
And related to that, maybe, is the idea that discipline is actually freedom. That pink wire cable seems paradoxical at first.
It does. But the book argues that self-discipline frees you from bad habits, from impulsive decisions, from wasting your time and energy. It creates the space for you to make conscious, intentional choices that lead to fulfillment.
Instead of just being pushed around by your impulses or circumstances.
Exactly. Then there's the primacy of thought. That magnificent garden idea, it's so empowering because it puts you squarely in the driver's seat of your own mind.
Right. You're not a victim of your thoughts or external events. You're the gardener.
Yeah.
You choose what grows there.
Taking that responsibility is huge. And finally, I think the message of Kaizen and consistency is crucial. It makes change feel possible.
Yeah, because it's not about becoming enlightened overnight.
No, it's about habits. Greatness isn't some mystical gift. It's built day by day through those small compounding rituals. It makes profound self-improvement feel achievable for anyone.
The book is also packed with these really sticky phrases, lines that just encapsulate the ideas perfectly.
It really is. Like this one, summing up the lighthouse virtue. The purpose of life is a life of purpose. So simple, but it hits hard. It's a call to live intentionally.
Or the garden metaphor again. Your mind is a magnificent garden. It can be a vibrant and wondrous place. But if you don't tend to it, weeds will grow. It's like a little command you can give yourself daily.
Definitely. And related to Kaizen and self-care, this one reframes things nicely. Investing in yourself is the best investment you will ever make.
Yeah, it makes self-improvement feel less selfish and more like building your capacity to contribute.
Precisely. It benefits everyone. And for the path of diamonds, embracing the present, you can't beat. Yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, today's a gift.
That's why they call it the present.
Ha, exactly. Classic but true.
So for you listening, knowing the virtues is one thing, but actually doing them, that's the challenge. Sharma knew this, hence the focus on Kaizen. Don't get overwhelmed thinking you need to nail all 10 rituals by tomorrow morning.
Please don't. Start small. Pick one thing. Maybe wake up just 15 minutes earlier. Use 10 for that ritual of solitude. Just sit quietly. Maybe journal one thing you're grateful for. Use 5 for the ritual of physicality, some stretching, a few push-ups. Tiny wins build momentum.
And that gold stopwatch. Take it seriously. Do a quick time audit this week. Just jot down where your hours actually go. You'll probably find pockets of time spent on low-value stuff. Identify one thing you can apply the 80-20 rule to, and practice saying no politely to one thing that doesn't serve your bigger goals.
Protect that time. And build that willpower muscle, the pink cable.
Yeah.
Start with a tiny, non-negotiable promise to yourself. Maybe it's making your bed perfectly every single morning or taking 2 minutes of total silence before you check your phone. Each time you keep that promise, you strengthen the muscle. It makes bigger changes easier down the line.
So, final thoughts. What's the biggest takeaway for you from this deep dive?
For me, it always comes back to the title, Selling the Ferrari. It's the central metaphor. The book isn't literally saying everyone should ditch their car and move to the mountains. It's about metaphorically selling whatever external status symbol, whatever attachment is holding you back from inner freedom, detaching your identity from stuff.
Yeah, that's powerful. What really sticks with me is just how effective that whole fable structure is. Using the garden, the lighthouse, the sumo wrestler, it makes these potentially abstract ideas about purpose and discipline so concrete and memorable. You don't just understand them, you see them.
It's brilliant storytelling. So the final thought for you to ponder. Julian had his Ferrari. What's the metaphorical Ferrari in your life? What attachment, habit, or external validation might you need to sell to let go of to find your own path to deeper fulfillment and inner peace?
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.